University.
Well, hello everyone. I'm here again with Basil, Bazillion Thought. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well. How are you?
It's been so long since we last talked, eh?
So true. I almost forgot what you looked like, so I had to look in a mirror.
I'll just remind people, pick up course at the academic agency, and where can people find you, Basil?
At Bazillion Thought on X and the Benny Basil Show on YouTube.
So you want to talk about, the intervention in Iran, what you've called normalizing relations with the Taliban, and also being brown, TM. I don't know what order you want to tackle these things in, but take it away.
Well, I guess let's talk about being brown, TM, because I'm sure this is something that you've dealt with as well, right? Where in order to, when we're engaging in the market, right, there are certain kinds of shorthand that people get lost, who are completely lost in the sauce, kind of revert to when they can't really address what you or I are saying, but want to discount us as someone that shouldn't be listened to. And for both of us, I'm sure it's you're brown, but for me, it's also you're gay. But it's also, it's this type of thing that kind of signals to me that the person saying it is a lost in the sauce lemming of a particular fandom, right? And it's these types of fandoms that predicate themselves and brand themselves as being quote unquote white nationalists, so to speak. So someone will say, why should I listen to a fat brown guy when he tells me that, you know, there's a connection between, you know, Peter Thiel and Mark Andreessen and Barry Weiss and Bronze Age pervert and raw egg nationalist. Why should I listen to you? You're brown. But however, those same people will pay their money to go listen to Razib Khan and Indian Bronson go speak at the Natalist conference. Okay. So when I talk about brown TM and gay TM and these types of things, when I'm not talking about the censorship regime, what I'm talking about is this kind of very lazy kind of market discipline tactic of pretending to care that someone is brown, meanwhile giving their money to Razib Khan and Indian Bronson, the people who platform them, or pretending to care that I'm gay, whatever that means, but then still, you know, making sure to give their money to Benjamin Braddock or Benjamin Roberts of IM1776 to confirm sodomites, or, you know, saying, oh, Basil's gay, don't listen to him, but we love Scott Bessent. Don't listen to Basil, but we love Peter Thiel. He's our top dom daddy. It's kind of trying to explain to the audience that these are cynical, very low vibrational, low IQ market tactics to kind of smear someone in the way that you might call someone a fed to fed jacket them. It's almost like you or I get brown jacketed or I get gay jacketed as a way to avoid the actual substance of what we're saying, but to signal to the broader audience that this is someone that we shouldn't be listening to because why? Because we're white nationalists who listen to Curtis Yarvin and Razib Khan and Indian Bronson. All right, give me a break.
Yeah, I mean it's pretty transparent. I mean, I somehow managed to go like 41 or 42 years before anybody called me brown, and yet somehow magically in the last year I've somehow become brown according to some people.
Like, let's put my skin tone up to a raw egg somebody's skin tone. Like, I don't look Algerian. Let me just say that.
But the thing is, it's irrelevant, isn't it? Because this is
it's just
a kind of, and the thing is that if you, as I was telling you off air, you've been around long enough, you kind of have moments where, you know, oh, this group is friendly with you now, and this group is not friendly to you, or vice versa. In which case, when you're in their good books, suddenly it's like, well, now it matters. Everything you're saying actually matters. But, mm-hmm. you know, now it's turning around, you're back, it's just another thing that you can throw at somebody to try to like discount what they're saying. Mm-hmm. The point is that when the thing that you're saying is, hold on a second, why is Donald Trump doing everything that these three billionaire donors want and nothing that his base want? Or, you know, where the point that you're making is actually quite substantial. Mm-hmm. I don't know how well that lands and how much of it is just, I was telling you, you know, automated bots, or, you know, literally an Indian in a call center, you know, versus actual real people. And It's just one of those things. I'm not actually convinced that it's that good a tactic, or it's been that successful in terms of attacking various people.
It's not a very good tactic. However, it actually disheartens me quite a bit, because it's not a good tactic. However, certain people who I know are otherwise intelligent men will engage in it, cynically, of course, but in a way that suggests that they actually do believe it's a good tactic. And that's what I call being lost in the sauce, where you actually think that the rules of our online fandoms are concrete and universal, such that like anyone actually cares in the real world what my racial component is. And it's the same thing where it's like, I actually loathe the racial politics of it, not because I've been implicated by them, but because it's like, it doesn't make sense in its own terms, right? Because like you said, if you like Basil, well then Pashtuns are quasi-Aryan white people. But if you don't like Basil, then I'm a brown third worldist, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And what I find on top of it to be so annoying is, you know, apologies to you, is that I don't care what a non-American has to say. I'm an American, right? So I don't care when this Romanian PhD or this very brown Cornish person or this captive Canadian has to say about me, because I'm an American born and raised in America, speaking about American politics in the Imperial Heartland. I don't really care. Like, so you're going to say that I'm brown in favor of some Romanian? You're going to say that I'm brown in favor of some Algerian Cornish person? Like, that's what annoys me, is that it makes otherwise intelligent men behave as though they have no brain.
Yeah, my least favorite version of this is the notion that the only reason I care about Israel is that I'm half Iranian, which is right. Probably the most dishonest attack line available, because I don't know if you've noticed, Basil, but probably 10 out of the top 20 Zionists are Iranians.
Right.
Maya Tuzi. And I mean, there's a whole network of, you know, pro-Pahlavi, mm-hmm. monarchist.
We must return the Shah to the peacock throne. Yeah.
Right. And they are some of the most pro-Zionist people online. Mm-hmm. So clearly, you know, and they're 100% Iranian, not just half like me. So clearly, when it comes to that issue, the blood does not dictate how much you do or don't care about a given issue. The dishonesty of it is irritating, because there are also tons of people who spend all of their time talking about Israel, who are 100% white.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Absolutely. So it's like, well. This is just a line. This is an attack line. One of my least favorite people online is Captive Dreamer. Okay. The reason is because it is impossible to get to any substance with him. Okay. Everything is one of these frames, feints, right? It's like, so you'll lay out a critique, whatever it is. His comeback will be, oh, well, clearly you're mentally ill. How do you deal with this as a comeback, right? I mean, to me, this is like liberals do this a lot as well. That they want to attack the text, they'll go to subtext. They'll try to do, well, let's do a psychoanalytical reading.
Why do you care? You're obsessed. You're weird, etc. It's the same type of thing,
right? So, I mean, how can I say it? I spot these tactics and I'm like, well, this is like, I've seen this stuff a million times before from shitlibs, essentially. Mm-hmm. That's what they're replicating.
And someone like Captive Dreamer and that whole ilk, what they do is they speak constantly out of both sides of their mouths. So one day they'll say, with Zionists you win. The other day they'll say, Zionists are anti-white. So they say one thing one day, the opposite thing the next day. And then the third day, they'll pick up whichever one is more expedient and then claim consistency based off of skipping over the days that they said the exact opposite. It's very annoying. And it's like, it's the thing is, like, when you're immersed in the market for long enough, like you said, you pick up on these things and you realize it's just completely cynical, you know, throwing elbows in the market. However, for those who aren't media market literate, who don't understand how this works, it actually has some kind of sway with them. And that's what I find the most, because it's like, I don't fault a cynical retarded hack for being a cynical retarded hack. I have more of a reaction for the audience member who falls for the cynicism. I'm like, dude, you're gonna, like, what's going on? Like, you should have more wherewithal to see past the kayfabe of it all.
I'm kind of at the phase where I just think, well, look, you have to create the audience in your own image. So every tweet of mine is an IQ test. Every video of mine is an IQ test. And if you fail it, not only are you blocked, but you're done for life. Mm-hmm. That's it, right? Any minus 30 tolerance, mm-hmm. any low IQ intervention by you,
yes.
you're out forever. No Weasley DMs afterwards. No, that's it. And I've always been like that. And
if anyone replies to me in the sense of like, oh, you're brown or this, immediate block. And it's not because I'm so sensitive. It's because you have demonstrated to me that you're lost in the sauce. And I don't, it's like, if you get it, you get it. If you don't, you don't. And for me at this point, a litmus test for me has been, am I an American? If you want to do this LARP where, oh, Basil's not an American because he's brown. Meanwhile, there are 40 million illegal immigrants in this country. Sorry, you're lost in the fucking sauce. If you're saying, Basil, you got to go back, I'm always the first one to be like, absolutely, sure thing. I'll be on the first plane out after you get 40 million people out of here. Because I'll be fucking damned if I go back to Afghanistan, a country I've only been to once in the past 2 years for the first time in my life, while there's 40 million illegals in here and you're still importing Afghans 5 years after the war has been over.
Yeah, I wonder about all of that discourse and whether if its actual design is not to deliver mass deportations, but merely to steer the manufacturing of consensus in a certain way, and that way being one that is congenial to the interests of that little country.
Mm-hmm.
Do you understand what I'm saying?
We talk about setting Basil back, but we love bringing in our Indians. We love bringing our Central African evangelicals and whatever who are over the past 30, 40 years have been conditioned to be rabidly pro-Zionist.
Yeah. So, I mean, is there any, do you see this happening outside of, you know, let's just face it, Zio-coded influence operations? Do you see it happening outside of that? Or is this a pure phenomenon of people who are literally just trying to nudge you towards doing things that help Trump or something like this?
Now that I think about it, I actually don't, because I've been in other spaces, for example, that are kind of more adjacent to the American Communist Party type people, like a Samira Khan, where I kind of default to a rhetoric that presupposes that those kind of cynical attacks, where they kind of are like, why are you doing all this throat clearing? Why are you doing this throat clearing about, you know, oh, sure, whatever, I'm brown, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It's like, oh, right, I'm not in the loony bin of the dissident right microcosm. I'm in a slightly different microcosm. Because that's the thing, it was like going back to media market literacy for a second, is to say, like, the microcosm that we mostly exist in is this dissident right media market microcosm. However, there's all kinds of ones. There's the Muslim media market microcosm. There's the communist media market microcosm. There's the shitlib media market microcosm. Mm-hmm. All of, you know, Black Twitter is its own media market microcosm. So, and they all kind of operate off of the same principles in terms of patronage networks, group chats, take sellers, notable figures, etc. They all have their own, but they all kind of have their own flavor of, you know, cynical media tax, right? If you're in the Muslim take seller media market, they're going to try to do like cynical dawah attacks where they're calling into question your morality or whatever. But if you're in the Bronze Age Barry Weiss sphere, what they're going to do is they're going to call you brown. You know, that's like the cynical type of attack. And it's like, it all operates on the same principles with different flavors.
I'm going to try to get my handle. I mean, I never really talked about this before, but there's a kind of another vertical, another space over here somewhere, very critical of Israel. They talk about foreign policy a lot, right? I'm talking about like Jimmy Dore, Glenn Greenwald, all of the Judge Knapp crew, to some extent, the Duran, a show I've been on a number of times. And I kind of have, if you do your Venn diagrams, I've got a bit of my Venn diagram overlaps with them, you know, because I've been on Duran and, you know, some of those guys watch me and, you know, I'm critical of neocons, they're critical of neocons and so on. But one of the issues with that space is that, how am I going to put this? I do think some of those guys do actually veer into genuine third worldism on occasion. Yeah. Okay, this is a tricky thing to navigate now because we've just dealt with the false tax against like Zwingli Yu, but not like I don't think anybody ever talks about this. That if you listen to those guys long enough, when they start talking about the global south, when they start talking about the axis of resistance, and they start talking about these sorts of things, you do actually see, there is an agenda, like there's another agenda there with a lot of those other shows that they're trying to get towards, like they love the BRICS countries, China, you know, maybe there's some Russian influence going on. There's something with that foreign policy focus sphere that is kind of like, and they keep all of their liberal priors, right? All that stuff you was like the civil rights stuff we were talking about on the other show, they would defend, like they end up defending civil rights or, you know, they default to constitutionalism or they default to, you know, standard leftism in other areas once you're off foreign policy. So, I mean, I'm trying to think of why the question is, like, how do you see all of that sphere in general? Well,
one thing that was really eye-opening to me was, I don't know if maybe it was 2 years ago at this point, when it was the EFF party in South Africa, where the guy was like, oh, kill the Boer, kill the Boer. And a lot of these people had a knee-jerk defense of that, right? And I'm not a white nationalist, okay? I'm a fat, brown, gay guy, right? But I am an American. And I love my country and I love my neighbors. I love my community and I appreciate that. I don't hate white people. I genuinely don't. So I do have this kind of aversion to this kind of, like you said, third worldism, this kind of hatred of the American empire as such. Because my contention is, especially when we talk about things, like Venezuela and Greenland and whatever, is to understand that, yes, there is a distinction between the American empire and the American nation, right? In the kind of communist sense of the nation as the people. But that doesn't mean that I want to get rid of the American empire. I know that the American empire is the only reason why a decent middle-class American existence exists. It's just that I understand that the American empire is compromised by a foreign influence, right? So when we're talking about Venezuela and South America, I'm like, sure, I'm all for securing the Western Hemisphere, of getting rid of, you know, Chinese and Russian influence and incursions into the Southern Hemisphere. However, we can't also turn a blind eye to this other country that seems to be getting a major foothold, whether it's with Bukele or in Chile or in El Salvador, or in Colombia or whatever, where these quote-unquote right-wing presidents that are winning are rabid Zionists. I'm sorry, there's another country there that's not just Russia and China that we have to be concerned with. However, a lot of these quote-unquote like third-worldist types just view the American empire as per se bad, where it's like, sorry, the global geopolitical sphere is a zero-sum game. You can't, when you retreat, our rivals expand. So it is very much, when you dig into it, there are lots of like foreign influences. Like you're getting flown out to go to Iraq. You're getting flown out to go to this conference and that conference. And it's like, why do you live in Russia, Jackson Hinkle? Like, you know what I'm saying? It's like, it's a lot of these things. It's like, sorry, I'm not going to. The reason I got into this kind of anti-left space is because I love my country. I love the freedoms that I grew up with and that I expect for myself as an American, not because I hate America and that I have some sort of like old world blood feud against white people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You end up being stuck between a rock and a hard place, though, when it comes to these sorts of things.
But I mean, you know what? What's great about being stuck in that rock in a hard place is it allows you to create a niche, right? Because what it is, it's like if you have this critique, it wants to push you in with these people. But if you maintain your principles and maintain your both feet on reality, you can kind of extricate yourself from those people. Then what ends up is you kind of have a third position, some might say. But you kind of have a kind of a different position that allows you, if you're going to take Cell, to differentiate yourself from both of those spaces and kind of carve out your own lane for yourself.
Yeah, that is true. That is true. The thing is, where I struggle with this is that I, because the American Empire and the influence that you're talking about are so closely intertwined and interlinked at this moment, that, I mean, I know people, I watched a few shows where they talk about them as if they're the same thing, i.e. the success or failure of Israel, as an example, basically lives or dies with the success or failure of the American Empire itself. And where I've struggled watching Americans over the past 2-3 weeks is how they temporarily forget this. Like, well, okay, Greenland and Venezuela is different, but I'm just saying, hold on, it's just being done again for Ben Shapiro. Do you know what I mean? Like, how do people mentally disaggregate those two things just for one news cycle? Because I can't. I mean, for me, I'm right at this moment. In theory, I can see it's good for American defense to, let's say, take Venezuela and take Greenland, so you have a buffer on the north and a buffer on the south, something like this. I can see it. If America was actually acting in its own interests.
Right. If there wasn't this imperial fifth column.
Right. But looking at, and that's the thing that I've been struggling with all the takes the past 3-4 weeks. How do people temporarily forget about this fact?
Yeah, no, I definitely see what you're saying, especially more with the Venezuela than with the Greenland. The Greenland, I do see more of like less of a Israel connection beyond. I see more of like a little tech connection, right? Which is 1 degree removed from the Israel connection, because why little tech has its gravitas and has its pull is because of their defense contracts that run through Israel, right? But then it's like what Greenland ends up becoming about is about, you know, these kind of like praxis cities or these like sovereign cities that these people want to build where they can do their biohacking experiments, et cetera, et cetera, outside of the purview of any given jurisdiction. But I think it's kind of, we have to reconcile ourselves with the fact that you can't extricate the fifth column immediately, right? There's no, that's not an option on the table, right? And you kind of have to deal, it's kind of an acceptance of not being in the driver's seat, right? And it just be like, well, these are the things that are being presented to us. So how can we take the good and leave the bad, or at least take the good and call out the bad? And not to say blanketly that the American Empire must fall, et cetera, because I don't want bad things to happen for Americans. And the American Empire falling would be horrible in terms of, you know, supply chains and all of this other stuff. So I think it's about kind of maintaining both. It's about doing both things at the same time.
Yeah. We're actually, as we're recording this, we've seen Mark Carney. I don't know if you watched that speech at Davos. It was an interesting speech. There was also, Trump was at Davos. The Greenland thing ended up to be kind of nothing, as often happens with Trump. But it has stirred a lot of bad blood, across the Atlantic and so on. I've never seen Canadian American relations are at an all-time low. European American relations are at a low. Trump said something that really pissed off a lot of Brits when he said, the NATO NATO troops are like behind the front lines, you know, not doing enough fighting. Well, Britain sent 140,000 people into Iraq and God knows how many thousand into Afghanistan. Hundreds of soldiers gave their lives. Everybody knows someone who served. So that was like a real, like that pissed everybody off. It kind of got everybody to hate America for that moment. And part of me wonders, like, is Trump doing that deliberately? Is he, like, is he deliberately pissing off all of the other countries to gear up for something? Or is he just Trump being Trump? Because, like, to have an empire, to have a global empire, the hegemon, the center of the power, like, actually has to kind of do stuff to want other countries to be part of it. Right. When I was growing up in the 80s and the 90s, you know, it was He-Man, it was Thundercats, it was, you know, action movies, it was pro wrestling. You know, I was kind of, I used to have a huge treat to go to McDonald's and have a Coke and so on. Mm-hmm. There was a kind of dream that people bought into. It probably had its apex with, you know, David Hasselhoff playing on the yeah. Berlin Wall as it fell. That was probably the apex of, like, American soft power. At the moment, it's being absolutely trashed across the board, mm-hmm. and Trump is just relying on bully tactics, right, and making America hated. How long can that really persist? Like, I mean, as an imperial center, can you just kind of act the bully indefinitely? Or, because, you know, Mark Carney's speech was saying, like, look, we have endured a lot of illusions and lies. Okay, and we turned a blind eye to them because it kind of worked. Everybody was better off for living in this thing. Now we can see the true face of it. Canada has to make a choice. And basically his choice is, we're going to try to go with China. We're going to try to go it alone. I mean, okay, you could
That's
say...
That's the thing. It's like, what's your alternative? It's your alternatives are Russia and China. And it's like, Europe, you've spent the past better part of a decade destroying your relations with China, with Russia. And China is just this foreign thing, right? That is not, does not have the kind of shared history that the American Empire has. So it is almost like a battered wife in a type of way. It's like, what are you going to do? You got kids now. You're gonna go out on the dating market? Who's going to take you? The Chinese guy down the street? I don't think so. What, you want to go live with him? His house smells. You're going to stay here and you're going to like it. I kind of think that Trump benefits from that kind of, there is no alternative, in a sense, where it's like there is no alternative to American imperialism, where it's like, sure, there is on paper the alternative of China, but I mean, what are you going to do? You're going to become more Chinese. You're going to turn Vancouver into Hong Kong. I mean, to what end? I just don't. I think that it's kind of like you're just going to take the beatings.
To be honest, the sell from China, or the appeal of China for a lot of people, and I've heard China spoke about in more positive terms in the mainstream media than I've ever have in my lifetime over the past year. The sell for China is, dealing with America has become a pain in the ass, right? 5 years ago, it was, okay, you have to deal with America, but also you have to trans your kids, you have to, you know, suck on the rainbow dildo, you have to love, you know, salute George Floyd and all the rest of it. Now it's a different lot, and it's like, you know, have to take moral lectures from J.D. Vance, and it's kind of just irritating. Mm-hmm. The Chinese, their sell is like, look, we sell your shit. You never hear from us. A lot of your stuff's going to have made in China on it, but kind of, we're going to leave you alone.
But your drug alcoholic ex still knows where you live. That's the thing. He's jealous and he doesn't like, that's the thing. It's like, okay, the problem is not necessarily working with China. The problem is that working with China is going to piss off your alcoholic ex. So then you don't want to be on the bad side of a guy that you already is annoyed with you and you're annoyed with. You can't leave, but you can't move on.
Do you see the issue, though? You're characterizing America as a drunk and abusive ex. This is like, we're a far...
But we love them. God bless them.
you see the issue, though. It's like, if you're reading a history book and people were talking about, well, the Ottoman Empire, that's behaving like a crazy drunk. It's like, well, okay, the writing's on the wall for the Ottoman Empire because nobody's going to tolerate that for that long. For the imperialism to work, people kind of have to love American stuff.
Well, you know what? Who knows if J.D. Vance is going to win in 2028? That's the thing. That's the kind of the beauty of the American system, where given a couple decades and it can look very different. You know, it's like the way the world treated Obama is very different than the way the world interacts with Trump. And it's like, it's not a given that it's going to be a continuation in 2028 with Vance. So if there's always this kind of, well, maybe he will change this time. You know, maybe he's different this time. You know, I think there is a kind of appeal of the abusive boyfriend.
It's the thing though, when I hear a Chinese guy, he's so calm, kind of serene.
Yeah, but he just doesn't have that virility. He doesn't turn you on.
But he doesn't. I mean, it doesn't come with any of the crazy. It's just always the same. It's just kind of there.
PD Ho loves the crazy. They could never leave. They could never leave. They can go to the Chinese guy, but they'll be thinking about us the whole time.
Well, people in the comments can let us know if Basil has sold the American
Empire. Well, you know, there is the whole race play take. There's a whole bazillion race play dynamic here.
I don't know. Anyway, we live in interesting times. We do live in interesting times. Where can people find you, Basil?
They can find me on X at Bazillion Thought and on YouTube at The Benny Basil Show.
And I'll just remind people, pick up a course at the Academic Agency. Trivium is the bestseller there. And it's been very interesting couple of shows with you, Basil.
Maybe we'll talk again. I'm so glad that we were finally able to do it.
All right. Cheerio. It's just going to kick us out now, so I'll say goodbye, all right?
Bye-bye.
If you like this video, be sure to like and subscribe. You can join the channel for thousands of hours of past shows in the archive and hundreds of videos. If you have any questions, you can leave a super chat or a super thanks, and I'll be sure to pick it up during my weekly office hours, which run every Tuesday afternoon. I also provide courses at the Academic Agency, which I encourage people to buy. Thousands of students now have taken the Trivium to improve their skills in writing, logic, and rhetoric. Just three of many courses available. Buy it now. But most importantly of all, friends, get out.